to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer, Joe Metz, and Zach Graham.
Presented by the FTN Network.
Bringing you the analysis you need on breaking news, betting markets, and your fantasy lineups.
Welcome back, everybody. The FTN NBA Podcast, Thursday, January 13th. You are probably listening to it on Friday, January 14th. I am your host, Joe Metz, running solo regarding my co-host today, Adam Pfeiffer, out sick, Zach Graham, with some prior commitments. But I'm not alone. I have two of my best friends, two of my groomsmen, who host a fellow NBA podcast lined up to be introduced very shortly on this podcast, talking about some contenders and pretenders, as well as the Cam Reddish to New York Knicks trade that broke at about 11 a.m. Central Time this morning. Before we hop in, if you have not checked out the NBA pick tracker, the DFS partner pick tracker on FTNDaily.com, this is 100% free. We have prize picks, we have top prop, we have super draft, any partner picks you can think of, 100% free. You can take advantage of all of the FTN promos, which usually include any type of deposit match up to about $100. PGA on sale as well now. Sony Open tipped off this Thursday, the second PGA event of the season. And NY, New York resident sports betting, is now live in your state. Online, four different mobile sports betting platforms, DraftKings and FanDuel being two of them. Five more books slated to go live before the Super Bowl. Tap in. Use our link in our bio for DraftKings and take advantage of some risk-free bets. Without further ado, let's dive into the show. I have two of my best friends, Mike Hankey and Jared Cohen, with me, co-hosts of the infamous Pick and Roll podcast in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm going to kick it over to Mike first, followed by Jared. Mike, introduce yourself to the people. Talk a little bit about the Pick and Roll and what you guys do, and then pass it off to Jared.
Yeah, so it's your boy, Mike Hankey. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Huge Bucks fan. Carmelo Anthony is my favorite player of all time. Facts. You can call me a DeRozan stan this year because Chicago is my second city. But we've been doing the Pick and Roll podcast for a couple years now. We record every other week. General NBA talk. You'll hear a lot about the Bucks from me. You'll hear a lot about the Knicks from Jared. But we do spread the love when we talk about the NBA as a whole. So we love doing it. It's so much fun. So check out the Pick and Roll podcast if you have a chance.
Love it. Jared, talk to the people.
What is good, people? This is your boy, JC, Jared Cohen. The second half of the Pick and Roll podcast with Mike and JC. Mike said it pretty perfectly. We hop on there. We're two diehard NBA fans. We hop on every other week, give you our takes on a lot of the hot topics trending, stuff that we talk about kind of on the couch that we're just hanging out. Obviously, Mike is calling himself Champ Mike the last year as his Bucks have won, or the reigning defending champs. My Knicks are trying to trend in the right direction. So we got a lot of excitement with both of our teams, hopefully. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. We got a lot of engagement here in Milwaukee. I am coming from, you know, a couple different places, Miami, Florida, by way of New York City. You know, now I've lived in the Midwest in Milwaukee for the last 10 years. So happy to be, up here talking hoops with my guys here tonight.
Yeah, it's exciting. We've linked up on your podcast before. Excited to have you guys on ours. But you mentioned you're a Knicks fan. Obviously, I tease the fact that Cam Reddish is now a New York Knick. So if you listening have been living under a rock for the last 24 hours, have not heard, Cam Reddish dealt from the Atlanta Hawks to the New York Knicks. Atlanta getting a protected 2022 first-round pick via the Charlotte Hornets, as well as Summer League All-Star Kevin Knox. The Knicks getting Cam Reddish, Solomon Hill, and a 2025 second via the Brooklyn Nets. My 15-second spiel before I hand it off to you, Jared, as a resident Knicks fan. I think New York fleeced Atlanta here. I know Atlanta is trying to collect any type of assets that kind of go after a player like Ben Simmons. The issue, though, is they're pushing these chips in for a hypothetical that I don't even think pushes them over the edge. Where, yes, there's a crowded wing in New York, but I think Cam Reddish, you take away RJ Barrett, you talk about the wings like that come off the bench, where I expect Cam Reddish to come off of. I think he has one of the highest offensive ceilings of that group. But Jared, how are you feeling about the reunion between RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish? Are you excited? Do you wish the Knicks did something different? Talk to me a little bit.
I actually was in a meeting like DJ Khaled when this news broke. And so I actually came out and was a little late to the news. I saw it kind of a couple weeks or a couple minutes after it broke. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a typo. When I saw the return, we fleeced them like a Patagonia fleece. I mean, this was an absolute fleece of a trade. I couldn't be more happy with this trade. I think the Knicks got someone in Cam Reddish that he's 22. This guy is a lottery pick. A lot of stuff he's proven already in the NBA. You know, he was complaining about his minutes with the Atlanta Hawks. Here he comes into a situation where with a young group, a guy like RJ Barrett, who is teammate at Duke. So I think that he's going to have a great future here with the Knicks. He's going to be a big piece, a big role player for us. And honestly, the return, you know, that the Hawks got, if you're a Knicks fan, you can't be mad at it at all. I mean, yes, we gave up a pretty decent draft pick. It's a protected pick that the Hawks get. Kevin Knox, you said it, Summer League All-Star. That's the last time he's really done anything for the Knicks, right? I mean, his rookie year, he averaged 12 game. You kind of saw spurts. I remember, Mike, when I was hanging out at your place, we were watching Kevin Knox summer or his rookie season highlights, and you saw that you saw a little bit of spurts, right? But it just wasn't enough. It wasn't enough consistency. He turned into a player that just stood in the corner, didn't really give you enough, and he fell out of the rotation. Cam Reddish, I bet he's just ecstatic to go play with his Duke teammate in New York City. He just played in a series against these Knicks, so he knows them well. These two teams are playing each other on Saturday. I can't wait for that. I think it's a great return for my Knicks. I just think that right now we have to build something, and we're staying with the youth, which is what I know me and Mike talked about a lot. The Knicks need to do is stay young. So I absolutely love this. I think that this is what we have to do right now. We weren't going to probably get any other, you know, trade. Maybe we'll see what they do. But, I really like this move for the Knicks.
Yeah, I also think Atlanta could have gotten more.
Definitely.
For Cam Reddish, too. Yeah. So, Mike, I want to get your, 10-second take on this. But I know you tuned in to our last podcast, and you have some pretty strong thoughts about Kevin Durant. Our FTN's Alex Blickle does as well. A little bit of a different mindset regarding Kevin Durant than you have. So hit on quickly your thoughts on the Cam Reddish and the Knicks trade. And then I know you want to touch on KD for a couple minutes before we head into the main topic, so why don't you do that as well?
Yeah, definitely. So with the Knicks trade, honestly, I like to trade for both sides. If Atlanta didn't want Cam Reddish, why not take a flyer on a young guy and try to get a pick that you think is going to be in the late teens, early 20s? I think that's completely fine. But the things I'm looking at, one, people aren't talking about adding Solomon Hill to the Knicks. I'm a big proponent of always having a veteran on your team. You're going to have a guy that's been in the league that knows how to talk to young guys, especially a team with a ton of young guys. I'm not sure how vocal Derrick Rose is. We know he's a leader and leads by example. Taj Gibson probably is pretty vocal, but I think the Knicks could use to have a veteran on their team, and I think that's going to be huge. I think another selling point to Zion, who loves New York City.
Yeah, that's facts.
One of their boys in Cam Reddish.
Come on home, Zion. Come on home.
You know, I don't think there's a guy in the NBA that wants to be in New York more than Zion. I'll say that publicly. But here's my big thing about this trade. Cam Reddish takes about 10 shots, and I think he needs more than that to be a good NBA player.
Yep.
You look at the Knicks roster, they have at least 7 guys taking 9 shots. So I don't know who Cam Reddish is taking those shots away from. It might be Kemba Walker, and Knicks fans get mad when Kemba Walker doesn't play, but it's going to have to be Kemba Walker because you're not going to take them away from Burks. You're not going to take them away from Quickley's development. When D. Rose comes back, he guaranteed gets his shots. So the thing with the Knicks roster for me is that they have too many shoot-first guards. Every guard on their team is shoot-first. Fournier, Barrett, Burks, Walker, Rose, Quickley, all shoot first guards. And I think they need to be searching for a point guard. So I'm not sure which shooting guards or wings they choose to go with after this season, but that's a big question mark for me in the Knicks.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, we were texting about this prior to hopping the podcast, and I don't think enough people view Trae Young as a pass first point guard, but his assist rate this season, 47.8%, leads the NBA, his career high among his four-year career. He's a consistent double-double. Like, yes, he's getting 28 a game.
Nine assists, right?
Yeah, like close to 10 assists. He's closer to 10 than 9. How many times a game or a year are we seeing his like 15 assist games? Like, he is a pass-first player, but he's by far and away their best offensive threat, where he's almost thrust into just that shoot-first role by default as well. So I don't disagree. I think the trade will look, obviously it'll age better for Atlanta if they pull someone like a Ben Simmons, who, while I don't think it gets him over the top, I think it helps them move in the correct direction. I think he's a player that would actually play well alongside a Trae Young. But before we dive into the contenders and pretenders, Mike, I know you are known for your therapy sessions on the Pick and Roll podcast. So talk to me about KD. Get whatever's on your chest, get it off.
Well, first of all, I don't have any beefs with anybody. It's all love. Yeah. But I think we need to give some love to KD. So I will say, I think on the FTN podcast, KD is severely underrated.
Ooh.
And let's talk about the guy out of Texas, the 7-foot assassin. I mean, these are things we already know. The only player to score 25 points or more in 41 straight games this century. We're talking about the youngest player to win a scoring title. I believe that was at age 21. He was averaging 30 points per game. And we can even fast forward to even another youngest member of the 50-40-90 club, one of the most efficient scorers we've ever seen. But now we can fast forward to this season, where KD is having one of his best offensive seasons ever in year 14 at age 33. KD is averaging a ridiculous 136.2 points per 100 shot attempts, which is a career best for one of the best offensive players ever. And he's also – I saw a breakdown of what he's shooting at spots on the court. So at the rim, 0 to 3 feet, 81%. 3 to 10 feet, 58%. Mid-range, 10 to 16 feet, 58%. 16 feet to three-point range, 71%, three-point percentage, 40%, overall true shooting percentage, 67.4%, which is a career high. So we're saying that KD, who's arguably one of the best scorers in NBA history, is having his best offensive scoring season at age 33, coming off of an Achilles tear. I don't know what we're talking about here. This is one of the greatest players ever to play the game. And I never would have thought I would have had to say the words that KD is underrated.
No, and I don't disagree with you. I don't think, Alex obviously being the one to come with the opposite take. I don't think the take was ever that KD's not one of the most offensively gifted players ever. I think statistically his impact off the ball is far different than people's perception of it is. But I will say, to your point on the contrary, he has the ball in his hands so much. That might not matter as much as people think. Now,
I was going to say is just that him saying when the ball's not in his hands, when you have Kevin Durant on the team, if the offense is not centered around him, then you need to fire your coach.
Exactly.
So, that's fair. That's fair.
There shouldn't be many stats even brought up when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, because the ball should be in his hands a lot.
Well, and here's the thing. When Kevin Durant's been in a winning situation, like crunch time situations, he's never coming off of a screen or he's never catching and shooting. You want Kevin Durant pulling up and taking that shot. I mean, people always talk about the infamous Kevin Durant's size 18 foot was on the three-point line. He's rising up and pulling for that jumper whenever he can.
And he made it in those situations.
Yeah. And he makes those shots,
So, obviously, Mike, you being a Bucks fan along with myself, Kevin Durant right now second in betting odds for MVP behind Steph Curry, which I don't think Steph Curry should be the MVP favorite. He's had, like, narrative-wise, I obviously broke the all-time three-point record, one of the best teams in the NBA, but statistically, he's having one of the worst years in the last decade for him. Kevin Durant, he's on his heels, plus 190. Giannis at 7-1 just feels like a much better investment to me than, as great as Kevin Durant has been, like, Giannis has been better, in my opinion. Am I off base? Is that just bias saying?
Well, I'll let Mike go, but
well, the thing is, Giannis is playing 32 minutes, KD's playing, a little over 37 minutes per game. And the scoring difference is not that much. So
not at all.
If you give Giannis an extra 6 minutes, which superstars at his age normally play. Giannis plays about 32 minutes, and superstars at his age, 27, are usually in the high 30s. If you give Giannis an extra 6 minutes per game, he's averaging an extra 4 points. So we're talking about Giannis. If he's playing a normal, you know, 38 minutes per game for a 27-year-old superstar, he's averaging at least 32 points. And tag that along with his rebounds and tag that along with his assists, which he's averaging a career high this year, and he's become a better playmaker just from watching the game. I don't see why Giannis isn't the MVP. You watch these guys nightly. I don't think there's a superstar in the league that plays with more effort than Giannis. Yep. I don't think there's a better two-way player in the NBA than Giannis. He has a case to be MVP and Defensive Player of the Year this year. And a lot of people's narrative on Giannis is that he doesn't have another star. You look at KD's team, he has James Harden, and now he has Kyrie Irving for away games and possibly home games if they do this whole situation. So yeah. I don't know how you award a guy in Kevin Durant who's playing magnificent, but has James Harden, who's also one of the best players in the league, on his team. I just don't see, you know,
Giannis
so much for his team that it's hard to ignore.
Yeah, I 100% agree. So
I would say as the lone non-Bucks fan here in this chat, I think it's my obligation to play a little devil's advocate here and just make a vouch a point for Kevin Durant. I mean, you look at the season for Kevin Durant, like Mike talked about, he's having an MVP, obviously a top-tier MVP-type season, with the points per game up near 30, okay? He's not missing, you know, other than him having COVID, he's had a healthy season. He's playing all the minutes you can possibly want him to play. He wants to play even more minutes. He's talked about that, you know, up towards 6 assists, 8 rebounds. And so I just think of it this way. Obviously, defensively, Giannis is always going to be better. And so he's the best two-way player in the game. I agree with you guys there for sure. And you could easily make an argument that Giannis can be the top MVP favorite right now. To me, the reason I think it's Kevin Durant is I think that KD right now, even though they have Harden and Kyrie at times, this is KD's team with the Nets, and he's more impactful for this Nets team. If they don't have Kevin Durant, they're a worse team. Whereas the Bucks, if they lose Giannis, obviously they're not the same team. They still are a really good team. I think team-wise, value in this situation, this season, I think Kevin Durant has more value on the Nets right now, the way he's playing, than Giannis has with the Bucks, because I think the Bucks have a lot of other really good weapons like Drew Holiday, like Chris Middleton. I think the way Harden's playing, not to Harden's level. Kyrie, obviously, it's a dicey situation with him not being able to play at home games. So this is KD's team with the Nets. If they go down, if he goes down, they're done.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks are so deep, like so deep, and the Nets are not. Kessler Edwards got like 30 plus minutes tonight. Like this team, like these guys can hoop, but like when you're like 10th guy off the bench is Rodney Hood, a successful NBA journeyman right now, not these G League call-ups, like you're going to be in a better position. So speaking of teams and you know, how they're performing, whether it's overexceeding expectations, not living up to expectations, I want to go through, I have 6 teams, 4 in the East, 2 in the West. I'm going to rattle through for each quick takes from each of you. We're going to call it contender or pretender, but I want to preface, like, I don't like it rolls off the tongue nice, but saying contender or pretender, like, I don't know if, like, these teams, when I say contender, like, these teams aren't, like, going to win a championship, but, like, are these teams legit, or is this just a regular season blip on the radar where they'll fizzle out in the playoffs and they're really not a massive threat in the postseason? So it's not necessarily, like, are these teams a contender and they have a chance at the championship versus are they a pretender and they're just fluky? It's just, are these teams a legit threat or not? So, Jared, I'll start with you, and I'll go with both you and Mike, each team, but like a 15 to 30 second, maybe a minute take on each team. The obvious one to start with, 27-12 atop the Eastern Conference, the Chicago Bulls. There has been, whether we think it's appropriate or not, a lot of debate on whether this team is legit or not. Jared, do you think they are legit? Are they a contender or are they a pretender?
Yeah, this team has earned my respect, I would say, the last month. When I started the season, I thought that they were more of a pretender than a contender this season. After watching them and seeing the eye test, I have to go by what I've seen. and this team is a contender. They've shown, and you know, obviously not against the Nets their last game, but they've shown before that that this team is here to stay with their big time winning streak, the way they've played the last couple weeks. DeMar DeRozan closing games, Zach LaVine taking not necessarily a back seat, but knowing how to play with a guy like DeMar DeRozan, still playing at a high level, all-star level, starter level, as Mike talked about on the pick and roll. But, you know, I think that those two guys centering their team with Nick Vucevic complimenting them, I thought the loss of Patrick Williams was pretty tough early in the year. The fact that they've been able to withstand that, because I really think he's a good player. They added Tony Bradley, a couple other guys. You know, I saw they just lost Derek Jones for a couple weeks, so he's going to be out. But I think this team is legit. Billy Donovan can coach. They got a closer. When you talk about playoffs and contending and winning series in the playoffs, you need a closer to hit a shot down the stretch. And DeMar DeRozan clearly has taken that reign with an MVP-type season. So there's no doubt right now that this team is definitely a contender.
Mike?
Yeah, I have to second that. I mean, the Bulls are serious. We've seen LaVine and DeRozan take it to another level this year. There is one thing that people aren't talking about. The Bulls are the number one seed right now, and arguably their best defensive player hasn't played a game since December 20th, and that's Alex Caruso.
Yep.
Before Alex Caruso was injured, he was making a case, in my opinion, to be taken serious for first or second team all defense. That's how good Alex Caruso was playing at the time. I think if he would have continued his campaign throughout the year and continued his play, he could have made a run at first team all defense. So the Bulls are putting up the same offensive threat that they've been doing, same offensive production that they've been putting up all season. But they've been missing their best perimeter defender. So you talk about them getting lit up by the Nets the other night. If Alex Caruso was there, I won't say he would have clamped Harden, but he would have done a serviceable job, and Harden wouldn't have been able to get all those easy assists through the paint on the Bulls.
Fair point.
So, I'm a firm contender, or I'm a firm believer in the Bulls being a contender. And one thing I also like about the Bulls is that they finally put Coby White into a six-man type of role. Last year, I didn't like the Bulls because they wanted Coby White to be their point guard and they wanted him to play with LaVine, and they both take too many of the same shots. So putting Coby White in that bench role where he can come in and be instant offense and kind of have a green light to take whatever shot he wants maximizes his strengths on the court. And I just think the Chicago team, you're going to have to score 130 points every night if you want to beat them.
Yeah.
I also want to add real quick too. I want to give some flowers to, you know, Ayo Dosunmu from Illinois. That guy was a steal that the Bulls picked up. A lot of people kind of slept on him, including me. I saw him play at Illinois. He has really been an impactful player for them this year. So
especially Patrick Williams out. He's really,
him stepping in there. Arturas Casanovas, the GM for the Bulls, he's changed everything for them. After them letting go of Paxton and Foreman, he's changed everything for them.
But getting rid of Gar Pax was probably the best thing that franchise did in the last, you know, 15 years.
Yeah.
I do think before we move on to the next team, the one guy we didn't hit on, Lonzo Ball, has been phenomenal. Surface stat level wise, taking a back seat, that's going to happen when you're playing with three high usage guys, two of them being wings. But, and again, New Orleans did not win a lot of games last year. But Lonzo Ball right now, 1.6 defensive win share this season. His overall defensive win share in a full season last year is 1.7. His overall win share last year of 3.2, he's already at 2.8 this year. His win share per 48 minutes is 0.112 this year. It was under 0.09 last year. Like, he has brought intensity on both ends of the floor. He's facilitating well. He is a triple-double threat every time he walks on the floor. And he's been a leader of this unit on the court without it showing up in the surface-level box score. That I think he's been one of the best offseason pickups of the season.
Well, it's crazy because Lonzo was one of the best offseason pickups of this past season. DeMar DeRozan was also one of the
best. I would argue DeMar DeRozan's the best.
As well as Caruso.
As well as Caruso. The Bulls
hit. They snapped on
all. They hit the lottery. They did everything correct. Like,
one
their gambles.
One thing, though, too, with Lonzo, and he has been great, but one thing just kind of that I would like to see him do a little bit better, he's shooting a lot of threes right now in this role. He's not shooting at a tremendously high clip. So if he's going to shoot these threes, I think he's got to have a little bit higher percentage. But I don't mind him shooting it. He's improved his outside shot. I just think he's going to be open a lot because this team is so deadly. They got to leave somebody open. So Alonzo, he's going to be open. So I think he's got to get that 3-point percentage a little higher.
Yeah, I agree. And in terms of frequency, he was one of the most frequent spot 3-point shooters in the NBA last year when Stan Van Gundy had Zion. Thoughts on Stan Van Gundy aside, mismanaged how that team ran their offense, but had Zion as a primary ball handler and Lonzo as a spot shooter. Kind of the same thing here. So moving on to the next team, Miami Heat.
Just one thing, Joe.
Yep.
I have to say, I think the Pelicans letting Lonzo go is one of the worst mistakes a franchise has made in the NBA in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
If you look at a player to pair with a player like Zion Williamson, Lonzo Ball fits that archetype. Yeah, for sure. Obviously, Zion has not played this season, but you're not going to plan your future on a player not playing for 6 months in 1 year. Like, I completely agree. Like, I think Stan Van Gundy kind of misused that. I like Stan Van Gundy quite a bit. But I think
more David Griffin to blame, who's the GM.
I agree, but no, I mean, like, the X's and O's, like, that team should have been running at a top five pace in the league. They should have been a full court transition team with at the time, Lonzo, obviously my guy, B.I., Zion. Like, they were one of the slowest, most methodical teams in the NBA, and they weren't defensively good enough to play the half-court basketball that they did.
Yeah, but it's hard to run at such a high pace when your star player is 60 pounds.
300 pounds, yeah.
He doesn't play a full season. He had a really good year last year. He just didn't play a full season.
Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point. So let's move on. Miami Heat, 26-15. I believe they are right now third, half a game up on the Milwaukee Bucks right now in the Eastern Conference. Mike, I'll kick it to you this time first. Miami Heat contender or pretender as they deal with these injuries or COVID injuries?
We're talking about the Miami Heat. First of all, let's start the campaign for Tyler Hero being the All-Star. No, well, sixth man of the year, yes, but I think he is also the All-Star.
I got shredded for saying he's a fringe All-Star guy on this same podcast 2 days ago.
We're talking about the third seed in the East, and Tyler Hero has played 35 games. Jimmy Butler's played 23, and I think on most nights, most people will agree that Tyler Hero's been their best player. So I'm giving him the All-Star nod, but I'm calling this team a pretender.
I think
Jimmy Butler in 2 years will be on one of the worst contracts in the league.
Yep.
He's only played 23 games this year. Bam Adebayo's played less than 20 games. Kyle Lowry's only averaging about 14 points, which is on par, and he could turn it up in the playoffs. But I don't see enough from this roster. The offense, I just don't see them putting up enough points to beat a Brooklyn, enough points to beat a Milwaukee, enough points to beat a Chicago. I just don't see it in the playoffs. I mean, if you're running Duncan Robinson, PJ Tucker, Jimmy Butler, and
Max Strus,
and Bam Adebayo, I mean, I don't think any of those guys can average 25 points in a really high level series in the playoffs this year. That's just Jared. My opinion. I'm calling this team a pretender.
I like it. Jared?
Yeah. You know, I actually think this team hasn't even hit its full potential yet. I think that this team still, they're missing. Look, they're missing Victor Oladipo. Okay, he hasn't played in a long time.
Has he ever played for them?
He has.
No.
Not this season, but he played when he got traded last season. But yes, not this season. Yeah, he did. It was a short time. Yeah, he's going to pull it up right now. But anyways, the other thing too is they haven't had Markieff Morris play since he got in scuffle with Jokic.
Real bad case of whiplash there.
Right. But, well, whatever you want to say about Markieff Morris, I think Jokic was fair in his that scuffle. I think this my point is this Miami Heat team, they are contenders because they've done a really good job with staining some of the guys they haven't had been able to play with their roster. And I like the toughness that they added this offseason, getting Kyle Lowry, getting PJ Tucker, Markieff Morris, a little physicality. And that does a lot in the playoffs. Jimmy Butler has to stay healthy. This team has to stay healthy. Bam Adebayo with the surgery. Jimmy's been out. You know, like you said, Hero's been their guy that's been the most consistent player. And he definitely should be an all-star for both of our opinions. But I just think Miami, with all the injuries, people forget they have one of the best coaches in the league. I know you guys don't forget. They got Eric Spoelstra. When you have that.
Yeah, we can agree on that.
It's possible deep in the playoffs.
So I do have a question for you two. And Jared mentioned their pickups in the offseason. Let's look at last year in the playoffs. The Heat got swept in the first round by the Bucks. What did they add in this offseason that can get them really over the hump from getting swept to being a contender? Can somebody tell me what really makes that much of a difference?
So I think the Heat got exposed as well as swept in the playoffs. Like, at the end of the day in crunch time, sure, Max Strus and Duncan Robinson are better shooters than Jimmy Butler. But game on the line, Jimmy Butler is going to have the ball in his hands. And the Bucks showed, frankly, how easy it is to defend him. He, unless he's driving, he's not going to be effective. If you have a team that can defend like within the arc, the Heat are going to have a lot of trouble. And my other big issue, like, yeah, they added Kyle Lowry, Markieff Morris, these guys, all these guys are well within like the heading into the second decade of their career. You're looking at a potential contender. You're looking at potentially 12 to 16 games in the playoffs. I don't know if these guys can last when they're already dealing with so many injuries regarding their endurance. 40 games into the season, you're looking at not only 42 more games, you're looking at a potential of 16 more games if they sweep four rounds, let alone they go to like seven games in two series. I do not think they can, like, from an endurance standpoint, hold up for the
playoffs. I would say this. Some people said that about PJ Tucker last year when you guys got him. Not you guys, but some people said he's washed, he's past his prime, he's getting up there in age. You saw the impact he had in that series. He was a difference maker.
His role is different, though. His role is a little different.
At the end of the day, he's a physical type player that's gonna be a dog on defense and give you what you need in a playoff series. Everybody knows playoffs is different than regular season. So yes, I don't think they're as deep as some of the other past Miami teams were that had deep runs. I think their top guys got to really perform high. But Kyle Lowry's a champion. The guy knows how to win. And so Jimmy Butler, a lot of people said that kind of MVP, playoff MVP type run in the bubble was a fluke because of the bubble. I think I want to see Miami play when they got everybody ready to go and fully healthy. And to answer your question, Mike, real quick, the difference from last year, getting swept to this year, I think simply is really just adding Kyle Lowry and PJ Tucker. Putting those two guys in there adds a depth to the team that they didn't have before.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I will never.
You won't hear me say a bad word about PJ Tucker.
Anything bad about PJ Tucker.
Yeah, right.
Guy's a Milwaukee legend. So moving on, we have two more Eastern Conference teams. Third one, a team that we are all enamored with this season, Cleveland Cavaliers, 24-18. One of the biggest surprises this season. Evan Mobley has been downright phenomenal for this team. The resurgence of Kevin Love and has been off the bench has been phenomenal. Darius Garland has taken a massive step forward. Jared Allen, his $100 million contract has been already looking like a bargain. So, Mike, okay, to you, contender or pretender? But again, I'm going to preface, contender obviously doesn't mean championship caliber team.
You know, honestly, I'm going to call this Cavs team a regular season contender with a caveat that I wish they were a pretender because at this point in the season, I want them to tank so that they can get a draft pick. Yeah. Because in the first round, if they end up playing one of the top teams in the East, it's a first round exit. And with them not having Rubio, with them not having Colin Sexton, it might be a lost season. But to see them keep winning games, I think is one is a credit to JB Bickerstaff, who I'm going to call one of the best coaches in the NBA. The way
he's a player's coach. He knows he gets it.
He's in consideration for coach of the year for sure.
He should 100% be in consideration for coach of the year with all of the adversity that this team has had and for adding Evan Mobley in and running him with the weirdest, three big lineup I've ever seen. With
Markin and Mobley and
Jared Allen, yeah.
JB Bickerstaff has made this team look great. But also, let's give a shout out to Darius Garland, who has one of the best handles in the NBA, just put up a triple-double the other night, took on a lot of the scoring load when Colin Sexton went out. Jared Allen, who most people will have on an all-star ballot, who's been playing fantastic, living up to his contract. And let's talk about Evan Mobley, who's also become one of the best defensive players in the NBA in his rookie season before, 50. This Cavs team is serious. Now, I do have a question for you two. Going forward, who would you rather have on your team, Jared Allen or Bam Adebayo?
You know what? I would still go with Bam, but it's close. It's close.
I would go with Bam too, but I think that is a little more contingent on who else is on your team because there are two bigs that do very different things.
Yeah, Jared Allen's been more valuable, obviously, this season.
He's played games.
Yeah, right. But I would take still Bam right now.
But, so Jared, okay. what do you think? What way are you leaning on this Cleveland team?
Yeah, I mean, so Mike put it pretty well. I mean, obviously they've played great. I think that they're a pretender in the fact that I just don't think the leap is too steep for them to be a contender after what they've done the last couple of years. I mean, people forget before JB Bickerstaff a couple of years ago when they had John Beilein, who used to be the coach for Michigan, took over. That was a horrible situation. They didn't want to play for him. He got fired, and then JB Bickerstaff was the interim head coach Colin Sexton's rookie year, and he completely changed the culture within two seasons. Obviously, give credit to the GM there. I'm blanking on the name, but he really has done a great job. I think it's Kobe Altman. Kobe Altman's the GM of the Cavs. Yeah. He has done a great job turning around this roster, getting guys like Rubio with the mix with the young guys, you know, Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, pairing them up, adding guys, you know, to pair well with, you know, a big man like Evan Mobley with Jared Allen. It just somehow works. I like guys that they've added, like Lamar Stevens, who's really playing, giving them good minutes. I just think that this team plays hard. They play right for JB Bickerstaff. I love Evan Mobley. He's a stud. He's kind of like an old school, you know, like a Chris Bosh type player. And I just think that the Cavs, they're only going to get better if they continue to do what they've done, which is developing their young guys, mixing in some vets, and, you know, making a trade like Lauri Markkanen, which I think on the surface isn't a big deal right away, but it's a good move for them because it frees up some things. And I think that it gives them ability to kind of mix and match with young pieces with vets. So they're a pretender to me, but man, they're a great pretender because they've beaten my Knicks. They've beaten a lot of good teams this year. The Cavs, when they played the Warriors, you know, there were times where the Golden State was trying to pull away Klay's first game. They kept fighting. I mean, they were in the game without their two of their big time players, Rubio and Sexton. So,
yeah, I agree. I think I lean towards your sentiment, Jared, pretender, but in a respectful sense. Like, they've been phenomenal. I just don't think they have enough to make a run. I don't think Colin Sexton will be on this team next year.
Whoa, that is a scorching take. I mean, Mike is looking at you like, what are you saying?
Is it? Is it really a scorching take?
Yeah, because
Colin Colin Sexton has been a hot commodity in trade talks. They've been very open to trading him for the last season and a half now. And he has an expiring contract coming off of a season-ending injury. I think if he is a Cavalier next year, it will be obviously a very team-friendly deal given the situation. But I almost think the Cavs' success this year is a negative in the potential for Sexton's return because they're clearly showing they don't need him.
Would you, would you trade him if you're the Cavs GM right now?
I think it depends what the offer is, but I think I would. A lot of the reason being the jump we've seen in Darius Garland, Colin Sexton returning, he demands a lot of usage and a lot of touches. I don't know if after this season I would be willing to take the ball out of Darius Garland's hands as much as Colin Sexton would require. I personally agree with Adam, who was on the podcast last week talking. I think Colin Sexton, I'm not saying his ceiling is this. I think the best suited role would be the Jordan Clarkson role. Coming in 30 minutes off the bench, just chucking shots. Because if he gets hot, he is a microwave from beyond the arc, all over the court. And he doesn't do a ton outside of score. He doesn't cater to being a primary facilitator. He doesn't crash the glass, but he is an elite scorer, and we know that. I think a Jordan Clarkson role on a potential contender would be perfect for Colin Sexton.
Yeah, and shout out Adam, because I love listening to him talk basketball. I've said that to you, Joe, multiple times. Yeah. Shout out Adam, wherever you are. But I am on board with the Cavs trading Colin Sexton. I mean, personally, I would rather them, as much as I love Sexland, I would rather them slide Garland into permanent starting point guard position and get a two guard that's more of a 3-and-D guy. I think that's kind of what they need. With Kyle Sexton and Darius Garland, it's a lot of offense, but then the offense gets stagnant as far as facilitating and as far as distributing the ball. It gets really stagnant when you have both of them together. So I think if you put Garland at the starting point guard position, who I think is a better passer than Colin Sexton, and you add a 3-and-D type of two guard, you know, I would have personally loved to see them get Cam Reddish.
I was literally going to say Cam Reddish, or even like, again, I'm going to stick with the Hawks, but even a player like, The Hawks are not going to give up on DeAndre Hunter, but that caliber of player to put on the wing.
Here's the thing.
I'm not saying DeAndre Hunter, but that type of, like you said, 3 and D who can do a little bit more, that caliber of player, I think.
I get why you guys are saying that, you know, from a basketball standpoint, it would make sense from a front office standpoint. But I honestly think that, you know, Sexton, Garland, and Mobley, that core, I think that people, I think you guys are giving up on that a little too early. I feel like we haven't even seen the potential that could be there with that backcourt and a player like Evan Mobley, because Colin Sexton, like you said, when he gets hot, and the Cavs have needed scoring. And so obviously they've needed it now since he's been out. I think that I would give it more time. I would want to see what Mobley can do with Sexton and Garland more. I wouldn't just kind of press the issue.
I don't 100% disagree. My concern is they're gelling so well now that while that does have a lot of upside, in turn, it could also throw a massive wrench and instill.
Yeah, the trade value is perfect right now. You're right. Yeah. The trade value is better now, but so it's a risk. But if I'm the GM, I'm sticking with the. I like the backcourt they got.
Yeah, I don't mind it. So last Eastern Conference team before we move on to a pair of Western Conference teams. I love this team this season. Besides their last two games, it's the Charlotte Hornets. They're coming off back-to-back wins against the Bucks. I think a lot of those, what factored into those wins was obviously the absence of Jrue Holiday. When you have two very good offensively gifted guards in Terry Rozier and LaMelo Ball, and you have no elite defender to really check at least one of them, you're going to run into issues. And then there's obviously Scary Terry, who has decimated the Bucks since the 2018 playoffs when he just took Bledsoe to town. So Jared, I'll kick it to you and go in reverse order. Charlotte sitting at 23-19, 4 games above 500. They're only 16 wins away from their projected win total for the entire season. What are your thoughts on this team?
Yeah, so Charlotte has been trending in the right direction the last couple seasons. I know Mike has been high on this young team for a couple years now. I think that we've just wanted to see them take that next step and close games out, which is exactly what they're doing this year. They're winning more closer games this year than they ever have before. They were in a lot of close games last year, and they ended up losing a lot of those. I think a big reason of that is LaMelo Ball, what he's been able to do, calm, cool, collective, under pressure. That man is a problem. Miles Bridges, when he gets in the fast break, obviously we see what that turns into. And I just think that, you know, with the young guards they have, with you know, I look, James Bouknight, I want to see a little bit more out of him. I've seen spurts of him being something. I like, I believe it's Caleb Martin. I think Cody Martin's on the Heat. Is that right? I think Caleb Martin's on the Hornets. But, those guys and PJ Washington I like too. So they have a nice young group. And then some vets sprinkled in there with Gordon Hayward. And so the thing with them, they're still pretenders to me because I think the East has too many teams in front of them. But they're trending in the right direction. They're going from kind of the middle of the East, which you don't want to be at. They're starting to trend towards a contender. I feel like in a year or two, if we have that question, I might say contender. I think they're starting to get there.
Mike?
They're a contender. I am all
I like it.
Hornets team. So I'll tell you one thing. If you look at the bottom four teams in the East, Philly, Cleveland, Charlotte, Toronto, if I'm one of the top four teams in the East in the first round, I would not want to play Charlotte.
No way. Yeah.
That team runs more than any other team in the league. When they're at home and LaMelo throws an alley-oop to Bridges, the place goes crazy. When they're on the road and Bridges dunks on somebody, the home crowd even goes crazy. That's a team that I don't want to play. And one thing people aren't talking about, Gordon Hayward is putting up an underrated season. So let's talk
about just one game. One game this year.
He's healthy. That's the key. He's healthy.
He played 44 games all of last season, albeit in the 72-game season. He's played 41 of 42 games. I don't think we've seen him play this many games like on a consistent basis since his career year in Utah.
Yep.
But we haven't.
Gordon Hayward has been fantastic. And coming into this season, you might have thought for the Hornets to be good, Gordon Hayward has to close games or he has to command games and be the best player. That hasn't been the case. Gordon Hayward has been fine taking a back seat, and LaMelo has been the closer in most of the tough games. So for them to take this leap with LaMelo being a clutch option for them, with Gordon Hayward being healthy, with Miles Bridges being a consistent 20 points per game type of guy, I think the sky's the limit for this team. And if you're in the first round, if you're a top team in the playoffs, you don't want to play Charlotte. You do not want to go into Charlotte and let LaMelo throw an alley-oop to Miles Bridges and the place goes nuts.
Right. We literally just saw them beat the defending champions two games in a row.
They match up against you guys very well. I think they do. One of the reasons is I just think that they're that athletic. They're that
Well, they have a unique ability that a lot of teams don't have, where they have a very, very good small ball lineup when they put PJ Washington at the five. But if needed, like Mason Plumlee can hold his own against traditional centers.
He's got a nice job in filling.
Like they have a lot of positional versatility. Because then you still have like a Jaden McDaniels off the bench. Like you said, a Cody Martin on the Hornets. Kelly Oubre off the bench has had a huge bounce back season after a pretty down year in Golden State. So they run right now. They are second in the league behind Houston in pace of play at 101.2 possessions per game. They have the number two offensive rating in the NBA behind the Utah Jazz, ahead of Chicago, Memphis, Atlanta, Miami, and the Bucks. Their one hang up right now is their defense. They're 26th in defensive rating. If they tighten the screws on defense and get to a league average defense while maintaining that offensive upside, it's already a very dangerous team, but this is going to be a very good team with a very bright future. I refuse to talk any more about Miles Bridges on this podcast because I do it too much, but he's been so, like, his year-over-year improvement has been phenomenal.
Yeah, for sure.
So I
was going to say too, and I'll let you, move on to a different team. I think one thing that I wanted to mention too about the Hornets that I didn't get in is they're so good in the open floor, in the open court. But I think that as time goes on, I think they're getting better at running their sets in the half court offense. But there's times when the ball gets stagnant and they show their inexperience turning the ball over. I think as time goes on with these guys keep playing together, that's a big thing. You got to be able to play half court offense too and learn how to run your sets. That's what the Bucks do so well, that they just get the best of open shot in a half court type offense when they don't have their athletic guy Giannis running the floor dunking. So I think that they'll get better as the years go on with that.
And that's the thing you said, Jared. In a couple of years, you see this team being a contender. In a couple of years, my vision for LaMelo and Miles Bridges is for them to be the New Jersey Nets version of Jason Kidd and Vince Carter.
That's a good comparison. Yep.
LaMelo Ball is that talented of a passer, and Miles Bridges is that talented of a dunker.
Yeah.
Where if they get that chemistry going for the next couple of years and know exactly what each other is doing on the court at the exact time, That could be scary for the rest of the
scary hours in Charlotte.
Yeah, 100% agreed. So we have two Western Conference teams. I'm going to say the best one for last. Dallas Mavericks, 22-19. They're kind of just lingering back half of the Western Conference.
I know Mike's answer for this one, Joe.
The West, it's probably the same answer as me. The West has been way more top heavy and bottoms out quicker than the East this year. The East has been top to bottom, much better conference this season. I'm out on this Dallas team. I really am. I'm all the way out. Statistically, Luka's been his normal self, nearly averaging a triple-double. Porzingis has been better than he has last year. Tim Hardaway Jr. shooting like abysmally from the field. Brunson has been good, but he doesn't do a ton for this team when Luka is active, simply from lack of playing time. Who the hell else do they have to use in the playoffs? That's my concern. Like, I don't like this Dallas team at all. I think they need another star with Luka. Mike, I'll kick it to you because I know you have been a Luka critic for the last 24 months. What are your thoughts on this Dallas team?
I think this is a pretender in all caps.
Yeah.
So my thing with this Dallas Mavericks team is, one, none of us like the roster. I don't think they've really improved the roster year over year.
Yeah,
we can all agree on that. But my thing is, I don't know what Luka Doncic has done to elevate this roster also. So you watch the games, and with Luka's usage, I don't know if guys are happy when they play with him. So you talk about Porzingis, who you said is having a better year than last year. I disagree. He's shooting a career low from the three. His points per game is on par with what he's been doing for the last 3 years. And if you're Luka Doncic, you should be able to get Porzingis, who's been one of the best three-point shooting bigs in the NBA. You should be able to get him at least – good enough looks to where he can shoot 33% from the three in the NBA. And you talk about Tim Hardaway Jr. is also having one of his worst seasons in the past couple of years. He's shooting one of his best or his worst 3-point shooting years of his career. And if you're Luka Doncic and you're supposed to be this guy who gets so many assists, you need to be able to make players better. You watch this team, and I go back to thinking about the James Harden Rockets teams where he was the high usage guy and just set everybody up for passes. And guys loved playing with James Harden. You would look at PJ Tucker and Trevor Ariza, and they would be excited to get James Harden 40. They would love spotting up in the corner and making shots for him, and they would cheer him on. You don't see that in Dallas. You see guys really, you know, championing for Luka to be great and help them win. It's just, it's a weird situation for me.
Yeah, and I don't like this roster either. I'll agree with you guys for sure. I do like Jason Kidd as the coach there. I think he's going to help Luka with his development because he's never been questioned for that in terms of getting the best out of some of the players. Giannis obviously gives flowers to the development that he had when Jason Kidd was the coach. So I think that, honestly, you look at this Mavericks team, Luka, yes, I think he should be able to make his players a little better, but he hasn't had a roster to me that gives him a chance to do something in the playoffs since he's come to the Mavericks. He needs to. Porzingis has not shown you, he hasn't shown Mark Cuban, he hasn't shown us that he could be a second tier player with a guy like Luka Doncic. It's just clearly not working. You know, and I just think he stands on the perimeter too much. He's not physical enough. I think Luka needs a guy that's more physical if he's going to have a big guy like that. I just want to see them shake up their roster. I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr. has been abysmal. Dorian Finney-Smith, Maxi Kleber, these guys that they're relying on shooting from the perimeter, they haven't done that well. The to me, other than Jalen Brunson, the second best guy other than Luka that I like on their team, it's not even Porzingis. I like Dwight Powell. I think he's a great role guy, really efficient, good defense. Obviously, he doesn't create or anything like that, but he's a really solid player, and they're actually your plus-minus. Dwight Powell's really good with that. When he's on the floor, they play well. So, I mean, their roster's a mess. They need
yeah.
to – Yeah, and Jared – just real quick, Joe. Jared is talking about his favorite player aside from Jalen Brunson on the team being Dwight Powell, which is sad. My favorite player on the team aside from Jalen Brunson is Maxi Kleber, which is so sad. He's probably their best 3-point shooter on the team.
Right.
For me to say that my favorite player on the Mavs besides Jalen Brunson is Maxi Kleber shows what this roster really looks like.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this team outside of Luka, Brunson, obviously Porzingis, is just made up of a bunch of like depth role players that would fill contending teams. Like, it just doesn't work when there's 8 depth players mixed with a superstar and like 2 above average players. That just will not work in the longevity of winning games. So moving on, for the sake of time, the last team, this team has been so good this year. Hottest team in the NBA, Memphis Grizzlies, sitting at 29-14. Respect the M, says Ja Morant. I'll pass it to you, Mike, first. Contender or pretender for Memphis Grizzlies?
I'm saying contender, baby. I mean,
I like it.
If you want to go into Memphis right now and play against the Grizzlies, first of all, in about a month, you're going to see nothing but Grizzlies jerseys, because after Ja told that Warriors fan to not wear that jersey, that's going to be a thing in Memphis now. You're going to go into a Memphis arena, and if you're not wearing a Grizzlies jersey, it will be a thing. People will heckle you. Security and staff will look at you crazy. You might get called out. You will need to be wearing a Grizzlies jersey. So first of all, that's going to be one of the hardest places to play in the league, I think, going forward the rest of the year. And also, Ja Morant's playing at an MVP level. I mean, you look at just the athletic plays he can make and the clutch shots he can make. Ja Morant is one of those guys. You can name any of your favorite point guards in the league. This season, Ja Morant has given them buckets. We saw what he's done to the Suns. We saw what he's done to the Lakers. We've seen what he's done to the Warriors. We've seen what he's done to the Nets. He comes to Milwaukee next week, and honestly, I think he's going to ball out in Milwaukee. So to see what this team has done, and I know, Joe, you want to talk about Desmond Bane. To me, it starts with Ja Morant. They are one of the deepest teams in the league. But if Ja Morant's going to continue to play at this level – I don't see a reason why we couldn't see Memphis in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, and listen, I second that sentiment in terms of their ceiling. I think that if they do what they are capable of doing this year, they could easily get to the Western Conference Finals with the way that they play. They play hard. They play together. They're talking smack like Joe's boy Desmond Bain was to LeBron James last week.
I love that energy. I love it.
And I do too. And Taylor Jenkins, who's a Bucks guy, you guys obviously know him well. He's a great coach. The players love playing for him over there. He's a young coach. Ja Morant has just been incredible. He's doing everything he wants. He's a leader. It's a perfect fit there in Memphis. It's funny too, because this team, even though they're way more offensively skilled than those teams back when Grind City had Zebo and Gasol and Connolly, they still resemble the same kind of toughness.
It's the intensity. That's like when Desmond Bane did that. It's like the shades of the Zebo and the Tony Allen. Like intensity, offense is
so much better. It's so much better than they had with those teams. Yeah. They have more weapons. I mean, people are forgetting about Brandon Clark. Brandon Clark was a really solid player for them a couple years ago. He got hurt last year. He's come back. He's given them really good minutes as he's come back.
Yeah.
DeAnthony Melton. I mean, they got young guys up the wazoo. Dylan Brooks has been getting buckets. So, I mean,
Jaren Jackson Jr.
Like, I mean,
they're a deep team. Tyus Jones, I think Tyus Jones is one of the best backup point guards in the NBA.
He's showing a lot with them for sure. So, they're
especially both ends of the court.
So, yeah, they're a contender to me for sure.
I think my answer, I agree, is contender. And I made that decision. Ja Morant, no doubt, MVP candidate. I don't agree with Big Perk that he's the closest thing the NBA is to Michael Jordan right now. It's excessive. But this team went 9-2 in the 11 games that Ja Morant missed. Like, obviously, Ja Morant being the most valuable piece of his team and an MVP candidate, but that just illustrates how damn good they are outside of Ja Morant. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr. is one of the most productive, permanent big men in the NBA. He simply just can't play more than 28 to 30 That's minutes hurt. For yeah. the risk of injury. And he's still a pretty foul-prone hack. Like, he averaged the last 5 games, he's averaging over 18 points, 8 rebounds in only 28 minutes per game. Per 36 minutes this season, 21.4 points, 7.4 rebounds, almost 3 blocks per 36 minutes. And Steven Adams, I think Steven Adams' impact won't show up as much on the box score. You get a big man that played with another ultra athletic point guard in their prime, specifically in the pick and roll. That helps a player like Ja Morant so much, given Steven Adams' experience in the pick and roll with a similarly ultra athletic point guard. He just knows what to do, and I think that will help Ja Morant's offensive progression in the pick and roll sets. Desmond Bane, phenomenal. Dylan Brooks hasn't even played for about a week now. Similar to Jaren Jackson, struggles with fouls, but he's a very good two-way player. DeAnthony Melton, great off the bench. And we haven't even talked about slow-mo. Mike's boy, Kyle Anderson.
Kyle Anderson.
He's only playing about 20 minutes a game. He's been struggling with injuries, and they have a backlog of wings and forwards right now. But if Kyle Anderson's your, he starts, he's like your fourth option offense in the starters, but you can argue in terms of just overall offensive priority, like sixth or seventh man. Like, that's a damn deep team when Kyle Anderson is that far down the, like, quote-unquote offensive depth chart.
Yeah, I think Kyle Anderson is that good of a player to have with these young guys. I think a lot of people don't really respect what Kyle Anderson brings. I think Mike does, obviously.
That's Mike respects him enough for everybody.
I also like your point on Steven Adams. Steven Adams has fit this team like a Rawlings glove that I played at high school baseball with. He has fit this team so well. I don't know if it's just because he's a perfect guy to have with Ja Morant with the pick and roll. But, I mean, he's physical. I think him being physical, the way he plays, it just matches exactly what this Grizzlies team is. So it's been – their front office has been money with their young development and their free agency moves and, obviously, their drafts. So when you add all those things together, you get what they're doing right now. So they deserve it.
I agree.
Yeah, Mike, you look at this Memphis team and you think about when they had deep runs, when they were really the grit and grind. And this team resembles that team also, but I think Ja Morant is better than any player they had on that team.
Yep.
So you would probably compare, in terms of just talent, Ja Morant is probably as good. You would want to compare him to Marc Gasol. Marc Gasol was the best player on those teams. Ja Morant's better than Marc Gasol. And you want to see Jaren Jackson Jr. take a leap. Yeah. I've been waiting on that. I don't think he rebounds well enough. I'm not sure if he's a good enough shooter. I'm not sure if he knows what his role is yet as a basketball player. And I'm not sure how tough he is. He might be the least tough player in that starting lineup. So for me, I need to see a little bit more out of Jaren Jackson Jr. to take them to the next step. But they're checking off all the boxes right now.
I wouldn't want to face Memphis if I was a Western Conference.
And the thing is, they continue to beat very good teams. They're not just like beating up. They're beating up on bad teams, but they're not dropping these. Like, they're winning big games.
Yeah.
So they've been great. Mike, Jared, this has been great. I appreciate you guys coming on. Will not be the last time this season.
So
of course. Before we get out of here, obviously your podcast, Pick and Roll Podcast, correct me if I'm wrong, it's Pick_podcast on Twitter.
Yep.
You can find Pick and Roll Podcast on Instagram as well. So I'll leave it to each of you guys, Mike, then Jared. Where can the people find you on social and any parting thoughts you may have?
Yeah, definitely. On social, you know, my name is Mike Hantke, H-A-N-T-K-E. And then on Instagram, we're the Pick and Roll Pod. So if you want to follow the Pick and Roll Pod on Instagram, you know, we post some fire content. Go for it. But my last thoughts is Bucks and Six. You know, we're going to repeat, baby. We're going to make Robert Horry eat his words. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. As Mike's wearing his nice little black Bucks hoodie tonight. So he's got to do it. No, you know, Joe, I really appreciate you having us on. My social, Jared Cohen 13 on Twitter is where you can find me there. Jared Cohen 24 on the IG. And Mike, I obviously already plugged our pod on the IG. So follow us there. You know, we give some great insight, great questions, posts, funny posts, things like that. And we do some giveaways. We do some giveaways if you're in the Milwaukee area. We do some giveaways with some local businesses. So, in my last words, you know, in this NBA season, I just want to see my New York Knicks find some consistency. There's been so much inconsistency. We started the year 4-1. You guys were really like trying to slow me down from being gassed up about it. And now we're 21-20.
And now you see why. And now you see why we were trying to slow you down.
Yeah, right, right.
Well, that search is going to look like Jumanji. It's gonna take a while to find that consistency.
Well, you know what? I'm hoping that you're wrong. And I just want to say this. If we're sitting here on the FTN again and you bring us on again, we'd love to come back on. If we're sitting here in April and the Knicks are a 4 or 5 seed, I'll be blessed. I don't think they will be right now just based off their
– They won't be.
Okay, but a man can hope, and I just want to. I hope Cam Reddish fits this situation perfectly. I hope he's the spark that we need. That's what
we like. I think the Knicks could get to like the 9th seed.
Yeah, here's where we got to end it, Joe.
Hey, they'll be above Boston.
Here's where we got to end it, Joe.
All right. I'll cut us off before Mike goes too far. Fellas, always a pleasure. I'll see you guys soon. We'll be in Vegas together in a few weeks here. So for Joe, for Jared, for Mike, this is the NBA podcast via the FTN Network. We will be back next Tuesday, as always, our 2 times per week. Enjoy your night and enjoy some NBA basketball.
Peace. Shout out, Adam.
Shout out, Adam.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN NBA podcast with Adam, Joe, and Zach. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at APPfeiffer24, at JMeds34, and at KowaisenbergDFS. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.